just having a quick special edition webinar podcast-y type thing with Simon McGar from Data Compliance Europe and McGar Solicitors, and Peter Daly from the Castlebridge team, talking about some of the nitty-gritty questions that are cropping up when we start looking closely at what happens with data transfers to a particular part of the United Kingdom after the 1st of January next. Because while the United Kingdom as an entity is being talked about, we need to bear in mind that Northern Ireland is often a special case because of its close proximity and because of the cross-border bodies that exist as a result of the Good Friday Agreement and other things. So Simon, you and I were talking about this last week, and we kind of came to the conclusion that there were some questions that needed to be put on the table, and we're not sure if we have any answers yet. And Peter and I have talked about it, and Peter has stressed the fact that pragmatic solutions will inevitably be found, but only if we're asking the right questions. So what are the questions, Simon?
So what we've focused on Northern Ireland in the context of transactions, and those focuses have primarily been on the transport of goods. Now, that's important because obviously there's an enormous number of border, both of people and of goods, between the Republic of Ireland. It's an integrated all-island economy to a greater extent now. But that doesn't mean that that's the only form of economic activity that happens, or indeed the only kind of travel across the border. And the EU was at great pains in its withdrawal agreement to ensure that that all-Ireland travel and borderless economic activity would be able to continue even the UK from the European Union. Now, what we're seeing is recently a suggestion from the UK that they basically didn't like the consequences of that, which was that Theresa May's solution to this problem was that she and the rest of Britain, she proposed that Northern Ireland, along with the rest of the United Kingdom, would remain inside the EU's sort of remit for the purposes of travelling, moving goods, and therefore Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland could continue to travel back and forth seamlessly across the border. Now, the alternative system was to place a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of Great Britain in the Irish Sea. That was unpalatable to the Theresa May when she was doing her negotiation, and was very palatable to Boris Johnson as a method of breaking the deadlock. So the withdrawal agreement was done on the basis that there was going to be a control of goods across the Irish Sea, but so that there wouldn't have to be a border on the island of Ireland. And that's where matters stood until the British government recently announced that they had a plan to break international law and breach the withdrawal treaty, which did rather throw things into a bit of confusion at that point. However, at no stage during any of those negotiations was the question of the digital border addressed. Because while there are, of course, customs regulations in respect of transport of beef, of clothing, of all kinds of physical items, there are also rules in relation to the transfer across borders from an EU member state to a non-EU member state of personal data. And that obviously is what we're interested in here. But what I was struck by when we were talking was that the transfer of personal data across the border on the island of Ireland has not received the same level of interest and attention as the transfer of physical goods and items. But in a way, in a modern economy, it's the transfer of personal data that underpins the services sector. And at last count, the services sector is in excess of 70% of the UK economy. And so therefore, it seems to be something that really does need attention, both in the Northern Ireland context and in also the East-West context between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, if there's to be an equivalent to the goods border agreed in terms of data transfers. And in a way, that's an either or, which isn't necessarily the case in terms of physical goods. After all, we can travel physical goods through customs. It can be done. It can be very disruptive, but it is possible to do. However, there are limitations as to where you may send personal data, and those limitations can't be solved by just ticking a box. So that was the problem as a kind of I see it, that the question of the digital border on the island of Ireland hasn't received the same level of attention in terms of negotiations to date, but that at every turn that we look at, what we do know is that the digital border looks like it will be far less porous than the border for goods and services, whether the withdrawal agreement is completed and complied with or not, and whether a further trade agreement is agreed with or not.
I think that's the legal perspective on it, Simon, that we have this challenge in relation to cross-border data transfers. And the one aspect that makes Northern Ireland particularly challenging in that context is that we have quite integrated cross-border bodies. We have effectively an integrated telecommunications system, because sometimes if you're in border counties on either side of the border, your mobile phone decides it's moved country and things like that. And that has implications for how and where data is processed. But also, healthcare is provided for people in some parts of the Republic of Ireland by their nearest hospital, which happens to be in the United Kingdom. And that necessitates the movement of data, which is why this is not a theoretical academic issue, I think, at this stage. And the last time I can recall anyone really looking at it was when Politico did a ring around last year, last August. They spoke to some medical practitioners on either side of the border to see what plans were in place. And I think the best I can describe is that Mark Scott was met with blank stares when he asked, because no one had thought about it.
You see, the problem is that during the same period that we have been preparing for Brexit, it's hard to remember there was a time before it when we weren't preparing for Brexit. But during that period, the EU has been very focused on the implementation, that is to say, the operationalization of its Charter of Fundamental Rights principles in terms of personal data transfers. So we've seen both TREMS 1 and TREMS 2 really set the boundaries of what can and can't be relied upon for cross-border. We've seen the UK's fairly he implemented the GDPR, that there wouldn't be an issue in, to, I think now that a more realistic approach that they've realized that's needed, and that one member state treated and assessed differently to a member state. And I'm not sure whether they, in the early stages of the negotiation and the discussion in relation to Brexit, that was very clear to them. But the consequences of that are that we have very strong protections against transfer to countries without adequacy decisions. We have neither an adequacy decision nor the certainty of getting one in respect of the UK. And we have a shared surveillance and national security framework and mirrors the one which has already been examined by the Court of Justice in Luxembourg and found wanting, which is the United States in respect of transfers there. And unfortunately, the UK shares a similar framework for the purposes of security and interception.
So that's kind of the one aspect of the problem. Peter, on the ground, like, what is the reality of data transfer and movement across the border in the real world, day-to-day lived experience of people in the northern part of the island of Ireland, both Donegal and the six counties?
Well, for example, northern residents who work in the Republic are entitled to medical cards. Just straight off the top of my head, Crumlin Children's Hospital, is a joint venture between the National Health Service and the cardiac unit in Crumlin Hospital is a joint venture between the National Health Service and the HSC. Water is controlled on an all island basis. Electricity is controlled on an all island basis. I was very struck that we were talking about economic services and economic transfer. The island is far more connected than economic transfer. Socially, and very much at a government level, it is very, very connected. The North, to a certain extent, certainly from my point of view, represents a security threat to the Republic. Anything that is done to accept what I think we all realize is a comparatively delicate balance. The place where the problems are going to occur, the part of the EU that may or may not feel the ire, is certainly not going to be Malta. We need to be, we already know, what former Taoiseachs think. A blind eye will be turned. And I suspect that is the simplest way of dealing with the problem. I think from a philosophical point of view, many people in the Republic see Northern Ireland as part of Brexit Britain. Today we are working from a basis that Northern Ireland is going to be treated in the same way as the rest of the UK by the European Union. And I think that fundamentally misunderstands the philosophy in the rest of Europe, which two countries, one island, is a British aberration. The entire European Union strategy has been to divorce Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK. They're hardly likely to punish Northern Ireland at this stage, would be my way of looking at it. Of course, it may, there's already talk in London today of looking for an implementation period for the trade deal. We couldn't possibly have an implementation period, for the withdrawal agreement, but we could have for a trade deal if we had a trade deal. That's what Brexiteer lawyers are talking about today. The UK breaks international law. Is that a negotiating tactic gone wrong, or is that a serious position? I think everything needs to be there's vast high stakes negotiations going on with all sorts of agendas behind those. But I don't see it actually impacting on the day-to-day life in Northern Ireland. I suspect that...
So I would disagree on that point. I think that there is a high likelihood of real-life disruption. I think that likelihood comes in lots. Economic, but as you say, governmental. There's been discussion in relation to cross-border policing, information sharing, which is covered by the Charter, but obviously not by the GDPR. It's over covered by the section here under the Act implementing the directive in relation to police action. But again, a requirement by the Irish state to have a legal basis for extremely sensitive data outside the country. Now, no problem under the current member states, no problem. But the risks, and those would be real risks, it were to share data outside of the country without a lawful basis. So all by itself, that's one particular area the state could crunch things to a halt simply because its own risk would be too high. Similarly, multiply that by, for example, all our island.
Depends, Simon, on what you're judging the risk against. I think that's maybe the fundamental misunderstanding. You know, what are you judging the risk against? You know, Northern Ireland is a special situation. You know, the last time the Republic tried to interfere in the affairs of Northern Ireland was in the 70s.
I don't I'm not remember sure whether sharing
about the yeah the actions taken.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, if you look at something
on Dublin.
If you look at something very uncontroversial, I mean, for example, Allied Irish banks have Northern Ireland branches. They have branches in the UK, in Britain. They have branches in Ireland, and to a large extent, that's a unified back office banking system. And that would require that the back office be accepted that financial details to the UK branches, the UK offices as well. I'm not sure whether or not we could find the legal basis for doing that.
Yeah, I don't know about Allied Irish Bank. I bank with Ulster Bank, both North and South, and they are physically incapable of communicating between each other. They're in two entirely different systems. With two entirely different, legal structures. As I said, I don't know how Allied Irish is set up. I only bank with them in the Republic.
Well, I think what I'm hearing here is actually the fundamental issue that needs to be kind of brought out and addressed by those who are actually in a position to make decisions and influence policy, etc. Is that we have the legal reality and legal structure that is there. Of the Court of Justice and to an extent now the European Commission having been dragged to the table by the Court of Justice, applying the charter requirements and applying that in the context of GDPR and the Law Enforcement Directive in terms of cross-border data transfer. And we have the pragmatic reality that on the island of Ireland, there's just a lot of stuff that happens because it's always happened. And while there might be a period where certain things will operate on the basis that they've always operated that way, they will all be operating at a level of risk that someone could challenge them. And I think it's important, if I was looking again, we do look at cross-border data transfers for some of our clients, and that there are a number of there's a number of organizations here on the island of Ireland, take any of the political parties that are all island political parties, probably need to be looking at this very closely themselves, because we have the legal reality and what that means, and then we have the pragmatic ways of dealing with that legal reality that need to be considered in terms of identifying legal bases. For a period of time, there may be some benign transition that might be applied, but I'm not sure how sustainable that would be, and that's the problem. As he said, Peter, already, Northern Ireland is a special case, and the history of Northern Ireland should be one that encourages people to avoid causing unnecessary disruption to the way in which the world works, because when people's world gets disrupted, Northern Ireland tends to get a little bit tense.
Grumpy.
Yes, Northern Ireland gets grumpy. And there's nothing worse. Take it from me, Simon. There's nothing worse than a grumpy Nordie. And I'm not pointing at Peter when I say that.
Well, I mean, I would say that all of keeping the open border and goods and services are equally there for digital as well. There are very for maintaining that open border. That's why it's been the focus of the EU and the Irish government and then looked throughout this process. It's precisely because that's so significant put into it. And my feeling is that a similar level of energy to providing that kind of reassurance for organizations, for states, for whatever you want to call them, firms, in order continuation in so much as is possible of the seamless data across the border. And for the same reason thing to do for Northern Ireland. It's a part of the guarantee of a island approach to eliminating a hard border. And hard borders are, of course, not welcome in any format, whether they are in whether they take the form of custom posts, towers, or inability across borders in terms of the digital realm. So it's more that I think that this is something that I hope deteriorate in terms of the relationship between the UK government and the European Commission in terms of preparations. The more consequences of that are not being painted very clearly, both to the UK, mostly to the UK, that there are consequences that are so far unseen, but that does not make them unreal. This is one of those consequences that I would see, a failure to either address or even seek some sort of an equivalence between the movement of goods and services project and the maintenance of that, and the maintenance of the transfer of personal data, which underpins the services element of the economy. It's very difficult to run a services element of the economy without having good data flows. As we all know from trying to prepare and trying to react to the SREMS decisions. But of course, that relates to transfers to the US, which, while they are widespread, they do not have the same level of economic and social impact that interfering with transfers to Northern Ireland would have. So those are my thoughts on that. I don't know if that's of help, but I certainly think we should express thoughts on this as much as possible, because I don't hear an awful lot of thoughts going out in the public. And I think it's something that, you know, this digital border is something that people and we should try and struggle towards.
You cut out a bit there, Simon.
I would entirely agree with what Simon was saying. It is, you know, it's an issue that needs awareness raised, because it is going to come and bite people. But the way it is going to bite people is scrambling around, finding ways to continue what they're doing.
Yes, very familiar in relation to the SREMS. Very familiar on that, yes. In terms of things like that.
What we ultimately have is, on an island where we have nearly 3,000 years of folk tales about large items being moved across the border surreptitiously, we might find ourselves in a position where people are having to move data across a hard data border surreptitiously in order for life to continue. But as we know from folklore and from recent history, when people get caught moving things across the border when they shouldn't be, that's when things get complicated very quickly.
I mean, I would say that what we're looking at here is, again, another pressure towards data localization inside the EU. So that you could imagine currently happens inside Britain for Northern Ireland purposes, for the purposes of processing both Northern Ireland and Republic.
Yes, I think it would be much easier to sell, and that, to a certain extent, apart from over the past 10 years, Northern Ireland has always been, certainly from a data point of view, separate from the UK. Separate driving license systems, separate council systems, etc. It's never been very well integrated into the rest of the UK, and I suspect it would be easier to facilitate cross-border, like everything else. It would be much easier to facilitate. There would be possibilities of a derogation or a simple blind eye to data that was housed in in Island of Ireland servers.
Yeah. So those are the kind of things that it's worth us teasing out. Don't talk about it as people in this area. Let's think about it first.
Certainly that's easier to sell to everybody. Yeah, I think the EU could live with, there's strange things happen with data, but none of it leaves the island.
Yeah.
So I think what we're finding here, just kind of to bring this initial discussion on this topic to a close, because we're not here to get answers today. We're simply here to ask the questions. But the sense I'm getting is that Simon and Peter, you're in agreement. I was going to say violently in agreement, but we don't use the V word whenever we're talking about Northern Ireland. We avoid the V word at all costs. But we are in agreement that this is an issue. We're in an agreement that there are various things that might be considered for a solution, because a solution will need to be found at some point in the future to this problem. And it's increasingly looking like that in order for a country to leave a union, there will need to be some form of special arrangement created to account for Northern Ireland arising from economic interests. Now, I've never seen that happen before.
Yeah.
That's just because you didn't get to farm pension from the British.
Okay.
Grand pension.
It's grand pension.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the invitation. I hope that was... Look, I think we just have to keep pushing out discussion in respect of the concept of a digital border. Otherwise, no one will bring it up.